Welcome back to the Capitalized Podcast. We are somewhere in the 50-something episodes, and today I'm super excited because this is probably going to be the first podcast episode that we're specifically talking about commercial real estate, and I feel like there's no better person, especially for what I'm about to bring up, for commercial real estate. This is Aaron Marchand. He works with Turton Commercial out here in Sacramento, California, which is a huge company. I'm sure if you've been around the city, you've seen their signs all over. I mostly see it in downtown, but I'm sure you guys have expanded and you guys have other properties and whatnot that you represent throughout the entire Metroplex. So I have a little story. I don't know if I've ever told you this, but my very first party that I went to was going into my freshman year of high school. And it was in this like abandoned warehouse in downtown Sacramento, right by Safeway. Do you remember that? Do you remember that building? It was right next to a painting store.
I know it well.
Okay. I would call, I believe it was you, literally every month for a couple years, trying to see if I could rent it out. Because when I went to that party going into my freshman year, that's where they threw it. They had security and everything. It was highly regulated. Like, it was behind, you know, it was tucked off.
Yeah, right next to the railroad tracks.
Yep, right next to the railroad tracks. It never got shut down. No one ever came in and, like, you know, did anything. So I was like, oh my God, that was my favorite place ever. It was this huge warehouse, abandoned, basically. Like, there wasn't really anything there. So I would call you, like, once a month, and I'd be like, hey, I really want to rent it out. I want to throw this party for my graduation. Can you make it happen? And you just were like, no. No, no, not going to happen. There's a boat in there. You'd have to take everything out. The owner doesn't want to, or something like that. Yep. Do you remember?
I do
that
remember.
That was me.
There was a hearse in there. There was a boat, and there was just a lot of shit in that warehouse that had accumulated over the years, and sold it, and it's been since torn down.
Yep. So, I noticed that. I was kind of sad.
Yeah.
So what are they building there now?
The plan is a restaurant on the ground floor with some residential above it.
Oh, okay.
And so it's, if we were to be there right now, it's, you know, cinder blocks and wood going up, just kind of getting going on a construction, but that's the current intent with it, and lease it out to a restaurant and with people living above it.
You guys handle all of that?
Just the sale portion. You know, we get involved with the kind of post sale or lease depending on the tenant or the buyer. Who we work with, you know, they could either bring in a construction team. If they're buying something to develop, they most likely have a relationship with some sort of construction component. But at the same time, if we see what they're doing or see what they're working on and somebody else comes to mind that could be a better fit in terms of a contractor, architecturally, engineering and so forth, you know, we'll definitely try to, make those relationships happen or at least make an introduction to see if we can further progress the project or at least just give somebody new ideas that they may not have already had.
Yeah. Gotcha. Yeah. That's really interesting, because I feel like there's so many components to commercial and there's so many different sectors and so many different lease types, and I've been trying to learn more about it as you know, as I progress and whatnot, but it's just such an interesting industry or interesting part of real estate.
Yeah.
That I feel like more people will get into the residential side, they'll get more into, you know, the popular things that are that a lot of people are doing right now. But what made you get into commercial? How exactly did you even start?
Well, I put myself through college doing residential lending. So I was a loan officer and quickly realized that wasn't for me. And I loved the process of the real estate, but also just kind of knew I didn't want to sell a house. I was more drawn to the buildings, the architecture, design, the neighborhoods, what kind of created the neighborhoods and led me to understand that there was even this thing called commercial real estate, and it was a whole industry that opened my eyes, and you know, really just kind of kept asking questions and following up and meeting new people that led me into what I've been doing the last 12 years.
Wow, only 12 years?
Yep.
So what were you doing before? You've always been in like the real estate industry.
Yeah, I mean, it was basically college. Loan officer, commercial real estate, you know, and so I was an intern for a while, you know, and slowly just, you know, progressed my career.
Yeah.
And, you know, we started this company 12 years ago in August. And so it's been really satisfying, you know, and educational to see, definitely for me being a Sacramento, you know, born and raised, yeah. seeing the city change in the way it has, it's mm-hmm. it's really exciting. And so it keeps me very busy.
Yeah. So you're a co-founder and the VP.
VP, yes. Co-founder, Ken founded the company. And then, you know, we met that summer, talked, you know, on and off every week through the summer. And then basically was like number one, you know, to join on.
Yeah.
And from there we're up to, 14 people now.
Wow.
Yeah,
awesome.
It's been really exciting.
Yeah. So what would you say your main role is in the company? Like, what do you enjoy doing most and what do you find yourself doing the most?
A lot of what we do is in the urban core, so midtown and downtown. We're highly involved with most development projects in Sacramento, at least in downtown and midtown. So, you know, we're a boutique company. You know, it's really fun. We definitely get to do things against the grain, so to say. And for us, you know, what I really enjoy is we work with a lot of the mixed use projects. You know, I was fortunate to be able to be part of the team for the Ice Blocks over the last, you know, 7 or 8 years now. And so to see that building and project go from where it was at, it caught fire. It was destroyed. We lost a year and a half to fast forward to what you see now and what everybody gets to enjoy. You know, that's been a really fun, you know, part of my career to see that go from dirt to rendering to actually a building.
Yeah.
And the Mars building is another one I'm really happy that I get to work on, where everybody goes to Lowbrow. And I mean, that was a referral I got 8+ years ago about some guys who had an idea for a thing. And fast forward, and it's, you know, one of the most popular spots. And so those type of community impacts for me are really fun. I mean, I've made a lot of good friends, learned a ton, you know, and now we have the city that now has an NBA arena right in the middle of downtown and now has better and better by the year shopping experiences and work experiences and now residential experiences, and starting to see the housing really take off has been exciting, because the development community that I talk with probably started out very micro Sacramento. And then as these projects got bigger and bigger, it was a regional discussion and it was a national discussion, and people know about Sacramento now. They talk about Sacramento. We're on the map as kind of what we all want. And so it's fascinating to just kind of go and see from where we were at versus where we're going. And yet looking at a big picture, it seems like we still have so much more that we can do. I mean,
yeah, definitely.
There's kind of, you know, there's talks of San Francisco and Oakland, and, you know, you see what they've done, and they'll always be amazing cities. But now to see that kind of trickle down effect come to Sacramento, to have Amazon here and have Apple here, and now an NBA team, and now the rumors and murmurs of us trying to chase the Oakland A's for their stadium. You know, it's in, and the soccer, you know, Republic FC, as they, you know, try to figure out what they're trying to do for their future here with the stadium. And it, I mean, it's kind of fascinating to think in a day we could go to a soccer game, an NBA game, and a Rivercats game, and literally walk to all three of those venues.
Yeah.
Across a river, across a really cool bridge, through a downtown. It's a really amazing city to be a part of.
Yeah. You have a great way of casting vision. Because it's like, we all know that these things are happening, but the way that you put it and how you make it about how we can walk there, or, you know, all these different structures and these known landmarks that we have in Sacramento, it's like, wow, that actually puts it in perspective. It makes it really exciting. So, I mean, I'm already excited for everything that's coming to Sacramento, but you kind of, you are a good, I don't want to say hype man, but like, you really put it into perspective, you know? But that's awesome. So when you guys were creating the Ice Blocks, you said you saw it from dirt to what it is now.
Mm-hmm.
So did you guys buy the land? You guys don't handle that. You guys don't do the development or anything. You just handle the leasing.
We're the brokerage team. So Heller Pacific and Fulcrum Properties are the owners.
Okay.
And Mike Heller had a design. Architectural team put it all together, and we then had to sell that vision to tenants, to the market, to pay rent and commit to the space while it was under construction.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we're one of the cogs in the wheel to that team, and there was such a big team on it, and, you know, we were lucky to be a part of it. And so it's been a great project. You know, I'm happy to say that it's a full project, even through the pandemic. You know, it's been 100% leased. And so that I think the tenants that were there, because it is dynamic and exciting as Sacramento is, it's also, you know, interesting that the Ice Blocks building was the first office building built in the grid in 10 years. And so,
really?
So those that were these first tenants, part of this story, they get to be the first.
Mm-hmm.
And so they committed. They wanted the showpiece space. They wanted the recruiting, the retention for new talent or keeping their talent.
Yeah.
And they wanted the glass, the raw wood, the industrial look, and our street and bars and parking and food and happy hour.
Yeah.
And they're one of the few that was able to get into that project and say they were a part of it and will be there for years to come. And so for us as a brokerage firm, I mean, we do the leasing side, we do the sales side, and then it kind of transitions into either the development team or the tenant who occupies the space.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so for us, you know, as a boutique firm, I mean, we're not international, we're not, you know, publicly traded, we're the little guy, you know, and it's fun that we can compete at the level that we can, provide value to the clients, provide value to the community, be, you know, realize like the ideas that we have, you know, turned into a coffee shop or a, you know, an apartment building or something with the idea, and recognizing the opportunity, and then the puzzle pieces of who's the right developer, who's the right buyer, who should sell to who and to do what with, and it just, it never stops regardless of the market cycle. And for us over the last 12 years, it's just been a really fun experience seeing the growth of Sacramento.
Yeah. So I'm assuming you guys, if you guys handle the leasing, is there any times where you drop buildings where you're just like, okay, we're going to hand this off to a different brokerage?
No.
No, you guys, I mean, just keep it.
It's, you know, it's we're commission based, you know, so we want it all, you know, and, you know, and as the firm grows, we do a lot of sharing in the office and delegating. It's definitely not the old mentality of this is my Rolodex, you stay away, and this is your Rolodex, mm-hmm. and we never collaborate or interact. And, you know, as our firm is predominantly, well, I'm 40 and I'm the oldest one there. And, you know, the thought of is 1 + 1 = 4. And so we try to do more things together than we do apart.
Yeah.
And so if it's a building that is, you know, that we're working really well on, you know, we might share it. You know, so everybody has a task, and all the buildings are serviced with our clients, where if I myself had 50 listings, I probably wouldn't be able to service them very well unless I had a whole team behind me. But instead of this kind of pyramid effect, we all kind of share that responsibility in touring the properties, reporting to the ownership, meeting the tenants, and everybody wins because the tenant gets their space, the landlord gets their tenant, another vacancy is filled, the broker gets paid, and we just repeat it a bazillion times.
Yeah. Now, in your experience, when you see, let's just say, buildings that you see the for lease sign for months, if not years, mm-hmm. places that haven't been occupied, what do you think those main reasons are why places can't get occupied, or the reason why they stay vacant?
I ask myself that often. You know, a lot, and I would say that the my crappy answer is it depends. I mean, we see some buildings where tax reasons they can't touch it or they can't put money into it. But, you know, a broker wants to hang a sign on it because it's branding for us, and so it just sits there. Others, it's...
Who pays for that? Who pays for the building? Owner?
The owner, he's got to carry the building, or I inherit a building. So I got basically dad gives me a building, but I don't have any money to put any improvements into it, but it needs a lot of work.
Yeah.
And so maybe I'll put a for lease sign up that I'll find somebody that will take it as is. They'll put the money into it.
Yeah.
And I just collect rent, you know? So, others are, it's priced wrong, or it's, you know, there's so many variables that, you know, or they're holding out for a development opportunity that could take years. And so, or there's a for lease sign up and there's no vacancy and just the sign was never taken down. So, which happens a lot, you know, because we want, as the brokers, we want the signs up because that's our name and number plastered all over town where, and the landlord may not live in town. They may not even know the sign was up and they haven't had a vacancy in a year, you know, so the property manager goes, "Hey, take your sign down."
Yeah.
It's been a while. And so, yeah, there's so many variables, but, yeah, I guess there's really no right answer to that.
One that I've noticed has been vacant, or at least it doesn't look like anyone's been there in years, is the Pier. Do you remember the Pier? The nightclub? It's right across the street from the Sawyer.
Yeah, that one, and that falls under the probably the challenging property category. I mean, there's no parking. You know, it's kind of this standalone building where you would think right across from the Sawyer would be an amazing spot.
Yeah.
You know, it's a multi-story building. It could have challenges. Not a lot of glass. It's dark. It's big, you know, so they probably want a lot of rent. And if you're kind of on that side of J Street, you're by yourself and you're kind of hoping, well, you know, maybe if I build it, they will come. But then that's a lofty bet, you know, to see. And then, you know, in that kind of block, selfishly behind, there's not much energy. You know, there's not a hotel next to it, or there's not a thing next to it. That block is kind of just, it's a little sleepy. It needs more activity to it. And so the byproduct of that is nobody's leased it, you know, or conversely, I'm not working on that building. It could have been leased a year ago and they're just waiting because of COVID that they don't want to open up yet. And maybe everything inside's been remodeled. It's ready for that grand opening. And maybe they were just about to do it, but depending on what's going on now with the new Delta variant, maybe they're like, "Well, let's wait." And the landlord has, I mean, if you're the landlord, you hopefully will work with that tenant versus starting from scratch. Cause those kind of deals take a long time. The construction takes a long time. Everything's expensive. So to start over, it's probably not worth it.
Yeah, definitely. And okay. So what do you, when you guys are leasing out to businesses, what are the most successful businesses you've seen continue to progress in their space? And then what are the ones that you kind of are like, "I don't want to lease to that type of business"? Is there anything that you kind of like cut out or you guys really look for?
Well,
especially for a new business,
the success is, you know, it kind of ranges, you know, it's fun to see, you know, a tech company start here and to go public and to grow that way would be successful. It's also for me gratifying and successful to see coffee shops like Camellia Coffee, Mass Coffee, Temple Coffee, Old Soul Coffee thrive, you know, against Starbucks, Pete's, you know, the big corporations. And, you know, so I guess the level of success is dependent on the user. And we definitely like to support local. And so the restaurant scene has just been amazing over the last 10 years. The farm to fork or farm to table movement here is definitely making, you know, headway. The beer scene's amazing, the coffee. So, I mean, we're definitely like on all these avenues doing really, really well. And, you know, and then add the housing, add creative office. You know, we're filling in all these gaps for a really cool city. And we still have a lot of challenges, you know, but we're getting there, seems like. And then in terms of second part of the question, the companies, I think, I mean, we're always, at least I go in open-minded regardless of the use. I think the hardest ones, well, here's a good example, you know, 10 years ago plus, you know, tattoo shops were like, "No, go away, gangs, bad people." And now they're amazing artists that are sought out and, you know, booked out for a year in advance. So they are truly, I think, getting more and more viewed as artistic versus a biker gang thing. The head scratcher probably in our world mostly is uses is probably cannabis. It's still just unknown. Federally versus statewide, all the different mandates and jurisdictional variables on that are still, that's probably the only deals that we not don't do, but our ownership group collectively, no one's, you know, really screaming, "I'll do that deal," just because it's just, there's still there just needs to be more education on the business side, the permitting side, the approval process to make that landlord feel comfortable with that kind of use. Mm-hmm. Everything else I think is pretty fair game, especially in the grid. It's definitely a more progressive ownership. You're kind of expecting the funky thing to show up versus a more traditional user that you might see in a Roseville strip mall, for example. It's just a different type of clientele. But for the most part, most of the landlords are pretty open-minded and willing to at least hear out a new venture of you know, to bring it to the market. But I think from a don't know how to react, I think it's, and it has been for a decade now, is the cannabis industry.
Gotcha. Yeah, and I mean, it's been legal for a while, but I've started to notice more cannabis spots opening up in Sacramento, which is, it's just, it's different.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we weren't used to it at all. Yeah. It wasn't even,
I mean, I remember seeing one on Abbot Kinney, Santa Monica, like, it looked like the Apple store. It was awesome. There was a line out the door, and I think they're, you know, so certain ones have figured out the way where it's a branding, there's real money behind it, versus the smaller, like, I think I want to do this because I saw it online, and you know, without a business plan, without a real team, it's a business, so you should treat it like that. And so, and that's why, you know, and then I don't even know what limitations are on permits and all that kind of stuff. I mean,
you guys don't handle any of the permits. You don't have to check that.
It's
when you're leasing out to someone, you're just like,
no, I mean, it's either the tenant's responsibility or if we're pulled into that, where landlord's like, I want you to check if that's allowed, call the city, we'll do it. Most of the time, you know, the onus is on the tenant to see if their business use is applicable to the zoning of that property.
Okay.
But you know, I mean, it'll happen in the conversation before a lease is even signed.
Yeah.
And there's some buildings and certain uses that may require a conditional use permit, and that could take upwards of a year, you know, so you have to have a very patient tenant, a patient landlord, the deal has to make sense. And then everyone's willing to go, okay, let's figure this, see if this, we can go through this route for a year, knowing you're still marketing the property. If something else comes along, somebody else could take it, because you don't. There's no holdsies on properties while you figure this out, unless they'll say, "Hey, we'll put some money down to hold it, and we all agree to work together." So, it just depends.
It's so dynamic. There's so many moving parts. Like, you could really do so much. I guess it's just more so about the negotiation, right? Like, what you guys all agree upon.
Yeah, you know, you have to go into it with an open mind, and if both parties do, and everyone, you know, at the end result wants the deal, if one side just plants their heels in the ground and says, this is my deal, take it or leave it, and the other side's the same way, well, there's no deal there. You move on. And so, but for the most part, you know, you know early on, you know, if there's something there, and just the dialogue, how everybody's engaging, if it's really going to be a fit or not. And, you know, there's other vacancies. It all works out at the end of the day.
Yeah, definitely. So let's say you're leasing, you finally find a business to lease from the owner that owns the building. Is it your guys' responsibility to collect rent from then on, or you just made the deal happen, now you're out of it?
We're out of it.
So during COVID, you guys weren't affected at all. In the sense of, if people stopped paying rent, it didn't matter to you guys. It only mattered to the owners.
To the landlords, yeah. We're not, we don't collect rent for our clients, so to say. I mean, where it affected us is, you know, effectively everything shut down. So no one's leasing space, no one's doing anything, and we're all just kind of sitting around going, maybe tomorrow it'll be different, you know. But a lot of what we work on too, because we do leasing, we do sales, you know, and so we were fairly productive / busy through COVID, and out of it, and maybe back in it, wherever we're at. Because we, you know, the lease, there's the lease side on the tenant representation, the landlord representation, there's the sales side, and there's the buy side. And so we have a lot of variables that we work with depending on who we're working with that ultimately kept us fairly busy through last year, you know. And we, because we have, you know, computers and cell phones, and we could work, you know, it's just the hard part is, and it has been with COVID, is on the retail side, restaurants mainly, trying to figure out how to, you know, how do they open, socially distancing, do you have outdoor space, to-go orders.
Okay. You guys have to handle that, or no?
No, the tenant, but if a landlord's calling us and, hey, this tenant's struggling, no shit, who isn't right now?
Yeah.
But, you know, and hopefully they have a good enough relationship where they're working it out and we're not involved. I mean, that's the last thing we want to do. But it's going to happen, and it happens, you know, where they just, you know, weren't going to make it through COVID. So obviously put our for lease sign out and try to find a new tenant.
Yeah.
The office side, for sure has probably been the most affected, because how do you return back to work? What's the process? How do people feel safe? And, you know, now we're reading it more and more. Do you have to, you know, make vaccines mandatory to come back to the office? And so there's a big HR nightmare probably for the office world. And I'm sure every HR attorney right now is busier than they've ever been in their career, because it's a real unknown world on the office side, where I think for the most part, everybody wants to return back to work. I think there is that contingent that is perfectly fine working from home. And I think that is it's just something that is so different, where if I live in a 5-bedroom house and I have my own office, it's a totally different environment versus my colleague who shares an 800-foot apartment with two kids and a dog, and they're fighting for, you know, Zoom space on the coffee table all together.
Yeah.
I mean, that work from home versus my work from home, they're not even comparable. So they can't wait to get back to work, where I'm like, yeah, whatever, you know, I can go back and forth.
Yeah.
And times an entire company. Mm-hmm. There's just this like work from home depression.
Yeah.
And just there's no collaboration. There's no mentorship. There's no culture from working from home. You know, in some industries, maybe you don't need it. You plug in and work 8 hours a day. What do you care? You know, and you collect your check, where others mm-hmm. thrive on that, or they rely on it for X amount of what they're working on. They need to be back, you know, and mm-hmm. if that's the real, you know, culture that this firm was, if the firm was created on, it's just hard to do over Zoom. And so I think people are just tired of looking at screens and tired of looking at Zoom on their phone. And we're social people, you know, creatures, yeah. you know? And so I think, you know, that's been the biggest challenge of like commercial real estate industry, is how does the office world return in a safe manner? Because then also all those office tenants utilizing all these buildings, like the one we're in, they also go downstairs and patron all the retail, all the bars, all the restaurants on breakfast, lunch, happy hour.
Yeah.
So they're gone. The retailers are like, where is everybody? You know,
yeah.
there's this, it just snowballs. And
yeah,
that's where
it's a snowball effect.
Yeah, that's where it gets a little, it's sad, you know?
Yeah. Did you see a lot of owners selling the buildings at all? Did you see a lot of sales happening, or was it more like they're just going to sit on it and wait it out?
For the most part, I mean, there was no, I don't think we ever involved any sales because of COVID. They maybe saw an opportunity to, to sell the building because of XYZ reasons. But for the most part, if you didn't have to sell, you probably waited, because you probably would sell, you know, depending on your timing. I mean,
yeah.
3 years ago, 2 years ago, the vibe of call it Midtown Down, it was very high. So you were riding that wave of momentum of the opportunities here. And then as it comes to a halt, people might go, oh, well, I would say I would answer your question this way. No, and not because of COVID. You know, wherever I would get the calls, it's like, just let me know when these COVID deals come, you know, kind of the distressed market. Like, let me know when shit starts hitting the fan. I'm there. I'm going to buy it.
Yeah.
Those haven't happened yet.
Wow.
You know, we haven't had, we're not like the residential market where it's like good luck buying a house right now.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very slow industry.
Yeah.
But we're not getting calls from the banks. We're not getting calls from tenants or landlords going, oh my God, this is what's going on. I mean, for the most part, rent checks, because all the businesses were still operating.
Mm-hmm.
They were still making money. They were still meeting clientels. And it seemed like, as odd as it is the COVID side, I struggle to find people who really had a shitty year last year. Seems like people had great years. They
That's
were either
crazy.
Either more creative, or they lost, business was put on hold, but then it came back. Or they found new business they wouldn't have sourced because of maybe the way they were doing their business was they changed, they adapted to the situation. Everybody's kind of the other thing they were working on maybe took over and helped make ends meet. But we didn't have a single call, you know, as far as like, wow, COVID destroyed this building, you need to sell it now. I don't care what you get for it, just sell it. I mean, there's this, you know, the list of buyers who are waiting for those, you know, the feeding frenzy.
Mm-hmm.
It hasn't happened.
It never even happened.
And I don't think it will. It just doesn't seem like there's no distress out there. I mean, the restaurant retail industry has been struggling, but, you know, and so if it's a standalone building and it goes out of business, maybe the landlord goes, you know what, I don't want to deal with this again. Let's sell the building. That could happen. Mm-hmm. But for the most part, you know, and the grid is pretty resilient, you know, to most market, you know, fluctuations, and maybe including COVID. But I mean, it seems like construction's really busy. Residential real estate's really busy. The restaurants are picking back up. Of course, this last week, I don't know if they're on halt again.
Yeah.
People have been returning back to the office again. Maybe lately it might be on halt, but like everybody seems to be figuring it out. I mean, just, and you know, at the same time, everybody wants to be safe. And so I think it's just trying to figure out the layers of safety of the work environment while progressing the job.
Got it. That's a lot.
Yeah.
That's a lot.
It's been interesting.
That's really surprising how well, or not how well, but how much they've been able to survive through all of COVID, especially being in California and all the restrictions and how long it took to just kind of lift the mask mandate. And now, you know, we kind of have to go back into it, but it's been a lot harder, I feel like, for the state.
Yeah.
But sounds like everyone's kind of working together and making it happen, which is great. Do you ever see owners that not only own the building, but operate their own business in the building?
Oh yeah. I mean, in our world, it's an owner user, you know? Okay. And so, you have those and, you know, I think everybody over the last, you know, year and a half has really just put on that extra thinking cap. You know, what do I need to do if I'm a restaurant? Do I activate more outdoor space like we've seen throughout the grid? Do I get creative? The city's obviously trying to work with the retail tenants by allowing to expand outdoor seating to more loosened ABC laws to take to-go alcohol without food order or just to-go alcohol in general. Tweaking hours, obviously, with the mobile food ordering, to-go, curbside, dine outside only. I mean, some of the people really, you know, you saw their like kind of shift their menus to a more simple menu that's more to go. And they're like, yeah, we're not doing great. We're not doing bad, but we're pretty steady right now. And it's just working through it. And then as things loosen, they'll kind of go back to it. But there's a lot of people, or I'm sure there's a lot of businesses that are going, this kind of works. Maybe it told me maybe what I needed to do 5 years from now in a year versus me learning it a different way.
Yeah, exactly. And it definitely pushed people out of their comfort zone.
Yeah, and so I think, and I'm sure, I mean, it just seems like the restaurant industry has definitely been hit the hardest. And of the owners I know and talk to, most are, you know, if it's their passion, you know, they're really trying to figure it out. They're not taking no as an answer. They're not accepting failure. They will work to do what they need to do. And it seems like so far, you know, it's, you know, there was the PPP money was helpful. The, you know, all the loosenings of certain restrictions have been helpful. So it you would think it's kind of a team effort. How do we keep everybody in this? How do we all survive? And then, while at the same time, how does everybody feel safe and kind of layer that all together? And I think, you know, it seems like people are traveling more and more. It seems like people are trying to go out more and more. It seems, you know, people are busy. And so construction's going. I think the flight from San Francisco kind of that we have heard about, I think is real. But we don't have tall, dense residential towers or anything that density, I think, really made people feel scared legitimately. Yeah. And I think because we're just not that, we don't have that type of city infrastructure like in San Francisco, where there's just that sense of maybe a little bit more safety here because we don't have these tall towers. Everything's kind of mid-rise. We have a nice suburban kind of feel as you leave the grid. And it seems like everybody's been very welcoming. And then we've had a lot of clients too, where they have Sacramento-based employees with an office in the Bay Area. And now they're kind of going, we don't want to go to the Bay Area. We like it here. And so I think that's going to help pivot some of those companies to actually sign new leases here and go, wow, we like our staff of 20 won't come to the Bay. They are all in Sacramento. Maybe we should sign a lease in Sacramento.
Yeah.
And so we're seeing that kind of start filtering through. And hopefully it leads to bigger and bigger and bigger tenants for us all to enjoy or experience, because if one comes, then they all kind of follow each other. But, you know, it wouldn't surprise me if we start seeing some more of the more well-known tech companies, consulting companies, or so forth, plant flags in Sacramento. Whether they're small, it's okay. We don't need the mothership. If, as long as we get one of those, then two of those, and three or four of those, it all helps add to the, you know, the professional fabric of Sacramento, which then trickles down to the retail, which trickles down to the housing. And so they all support each other.
Yeah. Yeah. That's awesome. So I wanted to kind of transition into investing, because although you guys are a brokerage, I'm sure you probably have to know just as much about investing as the investor himself or herself.
Yes. Our job is to either confirm or deny or challenge, you know, the investor. And it really depends on what they're looking at. It depends on their risk threshold, their hold time, you know, the goal with the investment. So, I mean, we do get into the analytics if needed, or they'll provide the analytics and we'll go, yes, this makes sense, or this number should be adjusted. And so, we're really as dependent or depended on as the client needs us to be, you know, so we have the ability to run analysis on buildings, which we do all the time. Other times they will make certain market assumptions, and that's where we come in and fill the gaps as needed. And so, but we definitely sell investment properties. We work with the investment community, the development community, the owner user community. And so with that, we have our education, so to say, on the investment side of the assets.
Yeah. So you would say there's four, right? There's industrial, retail, office space, and multifamily. Those are like the main four.
And land.
So yeah. You guys handle land as well.
Yeah, because that land could become the next office building.
Yeah, exactly. Is there a lot of land right now in Sacramento, especially in downtown?
Scarce, it is. And that's why it's compelling, you know, to be a part of. For example, we're working on a project one block over on 3rd and Capitol Mall. You know, and so that's a 111,000 square feet of development opportunity. So it's the single largest development opportunity that the downtown Sacramento has to offer. And so all the way down to the single family home, you know, land that somebody wants to do a little infill project to. So the land is definitely an interesting variable, because just the lack of it. We don't have swaths of downtown land available. The city's well over 100 years old. Most of it's been built on, some hasn't. You know, we're starting to see some projects that it's the building is built mainly for the land purposes, then it's demolished and then built for single family homes. And so, you know, to answer your question, yeah, the retail, office, land, multifamily, industrial, and then I guess from a brokerage, there's also an investments category where a broker will only do investments and not handle any leasing and not handle any sort of land, dependent on who it is. But most of the time the brokerage or the broker will be specific in that sector. They'll just be a retail broker or an office broker or a land broker. My path has been a little bit different, where I'm more of a generalist of this area. So kind of my goal is to master midtown and downtown, where I can talk about land, multifamily, office, retail. There's not a lot of industrial, because those industrials are now really cool architectural and design offices, because they have the exposed ceilings and the old rafters and the concrete floors. And so so we get to see a little bit of everything, which has been pretty exciting.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah. Do you see a lot of multifamily deals happening?
It's probably one of the most active sub categories in brokerage right now. You know, apartment buildings are, I'd say apartment buildings and industrial are probably the two most active for the industrial, all the e-commerce. Amazon's definitely paving the way for a lot of new opportunities, and which is, you know, rolling into the distribution, to the manufacturing. I mean, that sector is extremely, extremely active. We now have Amazon here in Sacramento over by the airport at 880,000 square feet. So once that happened, everyone's going to notice. If you're a rival, if you're an ally of Amazon, you want to be next to Amazon. And there's land out by the airport. And as you go to the airport, 10 years ago, it was land. Mm-hmm. And then three-ish years ago, it was land in one building. That was Amazon. Now you go out, there's seven or eight buildings with more on the way. And so it's starting to see it. And then the multifamily, you know, it's considered a safe-ish investment. People
it's
need
the
a place to live.
Safer one of commercial, you would say.
Some would say that. It just depends on your risk threshold. Some may go, yeah, it's great, but the return's too low for what I want. Others go, you know, I'm 75 years old. I just want to, I like real estate. I'm risk adverse enough to want to invest in real estate, but I don't want everything on the line. If somebody, if you own one building and it's a single tenant and that tenant moves out, you're scared. If you own a 20 unit apartment complex, the chances of all 20 moving out, unless something's really wrong with your building, are pretty slim. You're just going to continually have 18 to 16 tenants at all times and occasionally hit 100%.
Yeah.
To that, so if you're looking at the two, the apartment one seems less risky because you, no matter what, you always have rent checks coming in versus that one tenant leaves, you have zero rent check and it takes a year to fill it up. That could be a dark day depending on how diversified your investment portfolio is.
How profitable, or what do you think out of all the ones that we are talking about is the most profitable? Which one have you seen in your experience?
All of them. I mean, all of them. Yeah. I mean,
like same type of profitability.
They all can, because it depends on what you're comparing it against. I mean, you could find a little piece of shit building on a corner somewhere and spend and pick it up for $100 a foot and sign a lease for 7-Eleven. And do the improvements and they open up and turn around and sell it for $1,000 a foot. So that would be very profitable versus the apartment owner could, you know, kind of the buy, rehab, flip mentality. They may not get that same price per square foot, but depending on the size of the building, they could get the same profit. And so they all have the means to be extremely profitable. It just really depends on the risk threshold, the capital, the timing, the luck, the knowledge. I mean, and so kind of all of it together where, you know, I don't think one is better than the other. I think they all have their fit in the investment community. It just depends on which one you're most comfortable with. Yeah. Knowing that, you know, they all have their risks associated with them. And I think most would say the least risky would be the residential, because in theory, everybody needs a place to live. And some may say, in theory, you don't necessarily need a place to work. You could, now it's been proven, work from home. Mm-hmm. So someone might say the office world is, they may believe it's more risky, because what if they don't come back? And what if they take longer to sign a lease and they move every 3 years and I have to redo paint and carpet every 3 years, you know, but at the same time, the return is greater, but the headache is greater. And that's kind of where it kind of goes back and forth on a sliding scale, where the greater risk, the greater reward is very true. And the safer investment generally yields the least amount of return, because that's why it's safe.
Yeah. But you feel like down the line, when people refinance, or if they ever sell it in the future, the actual value of the building will be higher. More than likely, or
if the proper appreciation is there, yeah. And in a commercial, the value is predicated on the rent, you know. So if you have a building and the rent, and then on a commercial, if it's non-residential, it's the creditworthiness of the tenant, and that's what the lender is going to look at. I mean, if you and I own two buildings, and Starbucks is in one of them, and Steve's coffee shop is in the other one, and they're both paying the same rent, and they both have great sales, the more valuable building is probably going to be the Starbucks building, because the creditworthiness of the Starbucks building, you could sell that one for a lot more, even though it's the same rent. Mm-hmm. The risk of the coffee shop versus the other coffee shop versus Starbucks, in theory, going out of business, you're gonna bet on Starbucks. Why everybody? Why wouldn't you? It's Starbucks. But that's not always true. You know, they could go out and then like our local guys go toe to toe and do better than Starbucks and Pete's here. But, you know, if you look at the balance sheets of the two, you can't compare them. It's just, so it just depends on what that investor is looking for. Do they want to feel good about their investment knowing they have the neighborhood coffee shop that adds value to the community and creates a safe environment? Or do they go, I want the 10-year lease and the assurance of rent by the man and the corporation? You know, it just depends. Or you might want that, but your next building, you want just more of the feel-good space. And the next one, they all make money. It just depends on what that criteria is for your investment or investor.
Yeah. What would you say the average length of time that a building or a property is vacant prior to having a tenant?
If it's in a good area, I mean, shit. I mean, we've literally had some vacant for years just because, you know, either it's a...
Owner pays for that.
Yeah.
How do they continue to pay? I don't understand.
Well, if it's a multi-tenant building, hopefully the building overall is cash flowing, where that just little extra helps. You know, if it's a single tenant, they're very patient. Maybe they don't have debt.
They're able to pay it?
It just depends. I mean, everyone's wealth means are different.
Yeah.
You know, some go, hey, I own the building, it's vacant. Yeah, it costs me $3,000 a month just to hold the damn thing. But once I get the tenant, they're going to pay me $20,000 a month. Mm. They'll figure it out.
Yeah.
You know, where others, but I would say, I mean, it could be a couple months in between tenants, you know, to a couple of years, just depending on the space. And, you know, the commercial world is slow, you know, so our escrows aren't a 30-day escrow like a residential, and you can just, you know, over and over and over again. I mean, we could be in contract on a building for years, literally.
Wow.
And so to months, you know, not all of them take that long, but the lease deals take a while. Because in theory, if you looked at it, if there was a space that was just a shell that hadn't been built out yet, you have to not only negotiate the lease and kind of get all the legal documents lined up to sign on the bottom line. At the same time, you have to design it. Then you have the leasing process. So tenant has to identify a building. That could take a couple months. Then has to negotiate.
One that they want.
That they want.
Okay.
So when they find it, so it takes a few months that they find a building they really love. Then they have to negotiate on it. And depending on how long the negotiations take, that could take a month to 6 months to a year. Who knows? Depending on how legal do you guys really want to go.
Yeah.
And then once you sign it, and then there's the design process, then you bid it, then you permit it, then you have to get the approvals to build it, then you have to build it, and then you have to move in. So it could take, like, a new restaurant from deal signing to they open the doors and we all go for happy hour could easily take a year.
Interesting. Now, during that time, okay, and there's a bunch of different types of leases, right? So depending on what the owner wants and what the tenant wants, that's the type of lease that you guys are going to agree on, right?
Correct.
Because there's a ton, and you can, like, negotiate the shit out of it.
There's... You know, you see leases anywhere from 17 pages to 117 pages.
That's nuts.
And so there's no right or wrong way. It's you know, the landlord may have their form, or we have some of the tenants demand they use their form. The attorneys get involved. I mean, it could go a while, you know?
Yeah.
So hopefully you have two sides that want to make a deal. Mm-hmm. And then they have attorneys that want to make a deal, and everybody works together. And 98% of the time, that's how it works. It's okay. The other two, the deal gets negotiated too much and you're out, or it's negotiating, but you just keep negotiating. You just never make the deal.
Yeah.
The various leases come with their own caveats, which are interesting. But for the most part, it seems to work itself out.
Yeah, that's awesome. And so how you mentioned it could take up to a year to really, you know, open the doors and everybody go in. During that time where they're building it out, getting the permits, setting it all up, who's paying that monthly rent? Is it usually going to be the tenant, even though they have no business yet? Or is it going to be the landlord that's willing to wait it out until the doors open?
Typically, it's a hybrid, and depending on how it's negotiated and how well everybody wants to work together. I mean, what you don't want is a tenant that drags their ass and they're like, oh, we're still designing, we're still going. The landlord's like, yeah, you're supposed to have been 6 months ago and you guys haven't even swung a hammer yet. What's going on? Mm-hmm. Those happen all the time, versus the landlord that is savvy enough to go, date certain, you're paying rent by March 1, mm-hmm. open or not. I'm giving you 6 months, I'm giving you 8 months, whatever it is, but we're putting a sunset on this thing because you can just, you know, you're just gonna drain this thing out.
Yeah.
And so for the most part, there's a construction period negotiated and then an opening date of X that once everybody kind of understands what's going on. Yeah. Sometimes it gets a little out of control, but for the most part, and everybody's working together and it slides a month or two, it gets worked out. Because you can always amend the lease afterwards. Like, hey, it took 6 months for you to get open. We're 6 months into this lease, but we haven't started yet because you took too long. I want to add 6 months to the lease on the back end because we really haven't, so it's all in the communication, that relationship, and it helps when everybody's local and can work together. But at the same time, because of the nature of technology, and they can be in New York and you never meet and you just work it out over phone and email. And as long as everybody has that common goal to get that restaurant open, for example, it'll work itself out, And when it doesn't, attorneys get involved.
Yeah. So if, like, let's just say a restaurant goes out of business during COVID and their lease is 5 years and, they're only on year three and they have to cut it short, It affects the restaurant a lot, or, they're out of business. It really doesn't matter. So the landlord's screwed.
Well, the landlord, it depends. He could either, it depends on that relationship. If the tenant's like, we're shut down, we can't open, we're out of money, we're not getting any PPP money, we're out. Well, the landlord's got some decisions to make. He can go after the tenant if they're legally, but if they're truly broke, what's there to go after?
Yeah.
Unless they're, a lot of the leases have personal guarantees tied to them. So you're signing on the line, you're signing away. It's not, this didn't work out, I'm changing my mind. That's not how it works. For the most part. Others go, I have a restaurant, the tenant went out, they gave it their best. I have a fully built out restaurant in Midtown. That's very leasable. Mm-hmm. Let's work this out. Let's try to work this out, but I'm also going to start marketing the space for lease. And you negotiate, maybe they owe you 3 years worth of rent, but you find a tenant the next month and you go, okay, I've made a deal equal or better. I like these guys. You're off the hook. Doesn't always work out that way, but it just goes down to that relationship.
Yeah. What do you see Hot Italian doing? You know how Hot Italian isn't there anymore?
I know it well. Yes. It is a listing of mine.
Wonderful.
So, there's a lot there, it's been a very active property. It was kind of one of those timings where the tenant didn't renew. They'd been there 12 years and it was just a good time to, the partners went separate ways. And then the pandemic hit. So the landlord, you're looking at us going, okay, the world is shutting down and I just now have a vacancy. And that's, we talk pretty often about it. Do we split the space in half? Do you want to sell it? No. Do you want to develop it? No. We go through those variables of what do you want to do with the building. And so in the last week, I've toured it with four different parties, so.
Mostly restaurants or
all
people
restaurants,
that want to do,
okay. All restaurants. And okay. So which didn't happen most of last year because the world was trying to figure itself out. So I think now there's more optimism now moving into this year than last year going, okay, I can see the other side of this. Love the location. Love the building. How do we figure this out? And so to answer your question, yes, the whole time the landlord's paying whatever holding cost he has on the building. But hopefully the back end of that, i.e. a deal being signed, is worth that hold cost over that time. And, he's a great owner, local guy, loves Sacramento. So he's like, I want to add value to the neighborhood. I want a tenant that is contributing to what's going on at Fremont Park across the street, on our street. Early on, 7-Eleven came to the building and wanted to sign a lease for half of it. And it was a quick no, moving on, because...
Wow, he wanted something local?
Yeah,
He was very adamant about that.
That or just something that's, one, that will pay rent, and two, that will be exciting, and having 7-Eleven take half of a space wasn't very exciting. It's an easy rent check, but it's not adding value to what I think the local community would want to see on that corner. So then there's this patient game of waiting and then being proactive, thinking of new ideas, reaching out. Bandera is a great example. Everybody loves Bandera. They were sad when Bandera went. So naturally it's like, we should call Bandera. Let's talk to Bandera. And then you name it, the Apple Store to Google, Amazon to really fun restaurants, and you just you make the cold calls, you reach out, you try.
You reach out to them.
Oh yeah, you can be. Oh, yeah. Wow. So we can either reach out to them or we can wait for them to call us. But if you have a really good idea, I mean, it's just how creative do you want to be, you know? Yeah. So with that one, it's going to take a special tenant to really, you know, be the one. But the last couple of tours we've had, we've actually had some pretty exciting kind of new to market, new ideas that are palatable and like worthy of a future discussion. So we'll meet on site, we'll go through the plans, talk about it, you know, and just, again, we're in that early month identifying the building period of the, you know, so next would be the offer, the negotiations. And so I think they're, you know, at the end of the day, selfishly, I want something very special there. And yeah. So, you know, so with the client, you know, it's having those discussions going, no, we should wait, this isn't the right fit, or, you know, and I could vocally say my thoughts, but he's the landlord, you know, if he likes the deal, he likes the deal. And you know, that's our job to bring the deal to the landlords and all deals to landlords. You know, we can't not submit a deal. If it's submitted to us, we've got to share it. You know, we can give our 2 cents on it, but you know, the goals to with that one is find something that adds value to what's already going on in that corridor.
Yeah. And you guys will, how your business works is you guys will get a percentage once someone comes in to lease it. Correct? Okay. Yeah. So the owner will not pay you guys up front just to go find somebody.
We do not get paid until the deal is done. Okay. Just like selling a house. Okay. It's a percentage of the deal. It's just that way. So we can work on a listing for 2 years without a paycheck. We can, but when you get it, it's great, you know, and you go on to the next deal. But yeah, it's a percentage of the deal.
Yeah. So that's why you guys are really out here in Sacramento. Like, you guys have a lot of properties that you represent.
Yeah. I mean, we try to
keep it,
go after it. Yeah. You know, we're pretty damn active, and
yeah.
So it keeps us, you know, it's like one building leads to the next building and it just starts to go, and then times that by 14 brokers, mm-hmm. you know, and everyone's got an idea, everyone's contributing, and it just really starts to get really fun momentum.
That's awesome. That's really great. So where can people find you? If anyone is even interested about getting into commercial real estate or investing or, you know, even being a brokerage, what would they do? How can they reach out to you? Or what are some tips that you have?
Ask. You know, I mean, I probably get somebody asks me once a month, every 2 months about commercial real estate. I'll never turn down to meet somebody for coffee to like share what I've learned, and you know, maybe they could be the next superstar, you know, or a superstar, or at least get them out of a situation where they want to make that pivot into, you know, a new industry. It's a fun industry. It really is. And so, I mean, I have residential friends that want to get into commercial and they'll grab me for coffee. I have friends that are in some sort of sales role that maybe cap out, or they're just tired of selling whatever widget they're selling. And so, you know, I get referrals for meetups like at least once a month, every other month. And I'll always say yes, because it's a fun give back to kind of share what I've learned and my thoughts on the industry and where things are going. And so, I encourage anybody that is interested in commercial real estate to reach out, and happy to share, you know, whatever insight I can provide.
Awesome. Great. Yeah. Can they reach out to you through Facebook, Instagram?
Facebook and Instagram are probably the most active from social media perspectives. You know, my cell phone, I'll get random text messages. Oh, my friend's an agent. They gave me your number.
Oh, wow.
You know, which is great. You know, we're all addicted to our phones anyways.
Yeah.
And so, email. So yeah, it's all of the above. I think my Instagram's Aaron Luke Marchand.
Okay.
But I think if you typed in Aaron Marchand, I think it pops up. And then, yeah, Aaron Marchand on Facebook as well.
Okay, so, got it. All right, awesome. Thank you so much for being on the podcast.
Thank you.